This is The Core of Education, crucial conversations about education and innovation with Dr. Rod Berger, Vice President of Education for Randa Solutions.
Welcome back to The Core of Education. I'm Dr. Rod Berger, and I'm really looking forward to this discussion with Eric Palmer. He's done a lot in education, and we're going to find out a lot about his background and how he came to the author world that he did. But I want to talk about a couple of his books, and a lot of you know him from, you know, the ones Well-Spoken, Teaching Speaking to All Students and Digitally Speaking, How to Improve Student Presentations with Technology. And we want to talk with him about his new book, Teaching the Core Skills of Listening and Speaking as Well. Eric, how are you today?
I'm well, thanks.
Well, it's nice to speak with you, Eric. I know we've had conversations in the past, and I thought it would be very valuable for our listeners and our audience to go down this road of, look, I don't think that we think about presenting and speaking and communicating the way that we should. And I know this is a softball down the middle for you because it's a passion of yours. But tell us how you got to this point where you wanted to sit down and write books and really think about educating young people with regards to the core skills of listening and speaking within educational context and beyond.
Sure. Well, I came into education after a career in business. I suppose I should go back before that, because before that I was the kid that was in debate and forensics in high school, and I was on the debate team at Southern Methodist University. Boy, howdy. And I was traveling around the country speaking. So I've always been passionate about speaking. And then I went into law school and came out of law school and actually ended up with a career in business, running a brokerage firm, trading commodities on the floor of a commodity exchange in Chicago for a while. And then when my kids were born, I went into education. Now, what I discovered when I was teaching was that teachers had been inattentive to speaking. My students didn't speak well. And this drove me crazy because my background was in speaking, and I knew in the business world speaking was valued. So I came up with a way to teach kids to speak well. And over time, more and more people became interested in that. And I was asked to speak at conferences and what have you. And at some conference, someone said, well, are there materials about this, about how to teach kids to speak well? And I said, oh, I'm sure there are. Well, I found out there weren't. There's zero books out there, and that's still true, except for Well-Spoken. There's zero books out there for teachers who want to teach kids how to speak well in any situation. So I ended up writing one. I didn't really have a plan of being an author and a consultant, but there was a need. There's a niche there that has to be filled because oral communication is critically important.
Why do you think, Eric, we've taken that for granted? I mean, it's a little startling to think that when you looked out there and you know, shared with people who said, are there materials, that you found that there were none. I mean, is it just blind ignorance? I mean, why would we avoid that, I guess, is the question.
And I think that's a great question, because oratory was part of traditional education for many years. If you look at standard curriculum in America in the first half of the 1900s, oral communication, oratory, it was a valued part of the curriculum. I think that what happened was, as we started moving toward the big test, we didn't test speaking skills, and so it kind of fell off the radar. For instance, I'm in Colorado. We've had standards since 1995, and we had reading and writing. That was the standard. Now it's reading, writing, and communicating. But at that time, reading and writing, and we had the big test, the Colorado Student Assessment Program, and it focused on reading and writing. And so people were so obsessed with these tests that they lost sight of the most important language art, which is speaking.
What has been the response to the book and really the series of books, both from, I'd be interested in, from parents and educators, because I would think that parents, it's almost a wake-up call to say, my goodness, these are skills that my child or my children need to have if they're going to attain a job. And we see all the stories about kids graduating and there's no job for them, or you know, the opportunities are very slim. What kind of skills do they need? Are they waking up and seeing this as a must-have?
Well, parents have always been on the side of this. I mean, anytime we came to conferences in education, the parents were so enthused because the parents understood that speaking is valued in life. And in fact, I always talk about the National Association of Colleges and Employers. Every year they do a study of different employers and say, what are the hot fields? How much hiring are you going to be doing? And they also ask, what skills are necessary? Number one on the list every year, oral communication. far ahead of written communication, ahead of teamwork, ahead of work ethic, oral communication. So employers know, and parents have always known, that speaking matters. And when I present to teachers, there's always an aha. Like, oh my gosh, that's so true. It's true my students don't speak well. It's true that everything I do in my class would be better if they did speak well. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I missed it. Now, there's an issue about trying to fit that in, but I think that's a solvable issue. But teachers mostly just have an aha, you are so right, what can we do?
Now, tell me if this is sort of a silly question or one that maybe there's an answer and it's been there for years, but would it help if we included this type of curriculum or at least topic into teacher preparation? In essence, if teachers going through their own preparation are, you know, developing skills in how to speak because they're doing it all day, every day, would that not bleed over to the students and then integrating that into the curriculum?
Well, this is one thing that drives me crazy. There's not one teacher preparation program in America that teaches teachers how to teach speaking. When you go to teacher preparation, you know, it's how to teach reading, how to teach math, how to teach science, how to teach grammar. Not one program has any classes about how to teach speaking. And so here's the water in which everything else swims. I mean, speaking and listening, take those away and you have nothing in your classes. And yet it's been ignored by every teacher preparation program, and districts tend not to have workshops about it or in-service trainings about it. So it's crazy that we haven't addressed this, because everything that a teacher does is better. Read aloud is better if kids speak well. Poetry recitations are better if the poetry is recited well. It's death otherwise. Book reports, presentations of historical figures after the research on biographies, and everything that every teacher does will be better if the students speak better. And of course, we know that life beyond for all students will be better if they speak well. So there is a bit of a disconnect, and it does bother me that we haven't attended to this in teacher preparation programs like I think we should have.
Now, you were referencing teachers who, you know, teach a speech class or debate class. I guess what I was trying to say is, what about just in their own? I mean, I see them as public speaking just in their role as a teacher, meaning are we training teachers that part of their work is in delivering information to an audience? And so even working on their own personal approaches to delivery. I mean, I'm sure you'll agree.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, and let me clarify. I hope I wasn't saying that only speech and debate teachers should be teaching speaking skills. Every teacher has students speaking in their class. Every teacher has to take on this job of improving student speech. But to your point, I'm sorry I misunderstood. What I have found was, I wrote the books originally for K-12 students and for teachers to teach K-12 students. What I found were universities calling and saying, well, our university students don't speak particularly well. Right. Can you do this for university students? And then I found a whole lot of, to tell you the truth, our teachers and administrators don't speak particularly well. No one taught them, can you do trainings for adults so that they are better communicating? So the work has expanded, and adults have seen the need also. Certainly my students will be more engaged if I am a better presenter, and superintendents or staff developers who are talking to teachers realize that often their message is dead on arrival because their speaking skills are so poor. So I'm doing a lot of work now with adults as well to improve their skills. So your point is well taken. It's definitely a need.
Well, and I'm wondering if you have a similar experience that I have. I'm always amazed after I've given a presentation, and you know, some of the comments are just about the presentation. The delivery, not really the content. That's sort of the first compliment you get. It makes me always wonder, well, what are you seeing on a daily basis? Because like you said, it's dead on arrival if we're not thinking ahead of time and preparing what makes a good presentation. And I want to get to that. But one piece, Eric, that I'd be very interested to know your opinion on would be the integration of technology and the impact on speech and oral communication. I think that when we started to see tablets and mobile devices come out, and we saw social media and, you know, the advent of text messages. I think some of the fears were we were going to lose our ability to communicate, and we were going to be communicating or even talking or writing with people in a very micro fashion. What have you seen, and how can it support what you're trying to do, and is it as dire as maybe we first thought or feared?
Well, there's a double-edged sword, because while kids are doing things like texting or tweeting, they're not in face-to-face conversation. And so perhaps they're getting less practice at developing conversational skills, oral communication skills. But the flip side is that all these new tools showcase speaking. I mean, every camera is a video camera, and every device has FaceTime and Skype. I'm looking at somebody face-to-face in real time and video conferences. So while technology has perhaps given us tools that have diminished our practice at oral communication, it has at the same time given us tools that showcase it and make oral communication far more important than it was a generation ago. How well you speak will be a factor because technology will showcase it. Now, the plus side for teachers is that very same technology that we can use to showcase speaking, we can use to engage kids and get them enthused about practicing and working on their skills. There are so many great things that teachers can use in their classrooms that work with oral communication skills. I love something called Flipgrid. Flipgrid.com. A teacher can put up a prompt. Kids go online, access that prompt, and record a video response. So I can see all the videos of my classmates and how they've answered this, and I can respond to them and to the prompt. And these tools are free or almost free, and they encourage kids to develop speaking skills. So it's a double-edged sword. There's the good and the bad to it. I don't think it's dire, and I think if we use these tools well, we can use them to really encourage oral communication.
Eric, let's dive into what makes a good presentation. And I have opinions with regards to even just PowerPoint. I like Prezi when it's done well. I'd like to know some of the things that you focus on with regards to presentation, if we can kind of break that down maybe into a bulleted list for people who are listening as to what makes a good presentation, and then those solutions that you like to utilize when you're up in front of an audience.
Sure. And it's a great question, because if you ask teachers, and I do at workshops, like, what does it take to be a great speaker, to do a great presentation? Of course, many don't really have any idea. Not their fault. They weren't trained in it. And a lot, just we throw out random terms, elocution, articulation, vocal modulation, rhythm. And some of these things are wrong. Speak slowly, speak loudly. Those are both poor advice. We throw out all these terms. I wanted to break everything into something simple and understandable, and it starts with this. All presentations, whether one-on-one or small group or steps of the Lincoln Memorial with 500,000 people or a podcast or video, two distinct parts, what I refer to as building the speech and performing the speech. And it's critical for adults as presenters to get this right, and it's certainly critical for kids to understand. Building refers to everything you do before you open your mouth, which is a radically different skill set than performing, which is what you do as you are speaking. And just to clarify, those differences is very important to help speakers develop. And notice I say performing rather than delivery, because it's a performance. It's not as simple as delivering a letter, delivering a package. When I was dropping my son off at college, this is a one-on-one communication. I'm dropping him off that first day of school. I had to carefully build what I wanted to say, and I had to think about how I was going to perform that. So, I mean, even in personal communication, this framework applies. And as we build a speech, we have to specifically think about the audience. Any speech has to be designed for a particular audience. There is no generic speech. We have to have interesting and important content that connects with that audience. We have to organize it well with a great beginning, transitions, and a great ending. Sometimes you have visual aids, and if you do, they should be important and powerful. You don't put every stupid word up there in a bullet point. And we have to pay attention to our appearance. How should you look for this presentation? But if I pay attention to audience, content, organization, visual aids, and appearance, I've built all that I need to build. Of course, the trick is I have to perform that. I have to say it. And this is where I came up with years ago what I thought was six-trait speaking. I said, what it really takes is you have to be poised. You have to appear calm and confident. You have to have a voice such that we can hear every word. You have to have life in your voice. You have to make eye contact. You have to gesture effectively with your hands, your face, and your body. And you have to use speed well. And I put that on the board, poise, voice, life, eye contact, gestures, and speed. And as soon as I did, someone from the back of the room said, PV legs. And I looked at it, PV, yes, yes indeed. It took on a life of its own. My website is pvlegs.com, and people were calling me years later saying I was working on PV legs to get ready for my presentation. It's dumb, but it's dumb like Roy G. Biv is dumb. And so that's what it takes to perform. If you're poised, if you have a voice such that we can hear every word, if you have some life in your voice, if you make eye contact, if you gesture well and use speed well, you're a great speaker. So that's the framework I developed, and that's what became quite popular and led to the demand for me to write a book or two or three about it.
Eric, one of the things that I think can be a very big hurdle for people, when, especially for professionals even, I've had conversations with friends and colleagues who then all of a sudden have a speech or presentation they have to give, is a fear around being good enough or having the resume to warrant a position in front of a group of people. And then I often find that that is far and away the biggest challenge that they have before they can even tackle some of these components that you're speaking of. Where does that fit in for you? And how do we communicate to people that their message is important and hence they are important, and even at the student level as well?
Well, you know, we have to understand that we don't have to be the master of everything we do. As a teacher, for instance, I taught my kids metaphors and similes. I taught English for 21 years. I am not the world's greatest writer. I'm not going to compete with David Sedaris at metaphors and similes, but that doesn't mean I can't teach them. And that doesn't mean that I can't model some of the stuff I've done. And we have to get that same mentality as a speaker. I don't have to be the master. Everybody understands that we speak at different levels, and we all understand that speaking is difficult. It's one of the biggest fears for all adults. And so what it really is just accepting that, yes, we have different levels, and we may not be as masterful as someone else, but that doesn't mean we don't have something to contribute. That doesn't mean we can't teach the skills to someone else who may then become a master. I don't know that one of my students hasn't become a wonderful writer, and it started with a simple lesson from me, a non-master. So I think we have to get past the idea that you have to be an expert before you try something.
Where do you stand with regards to memorization? I mean, I can remember when I hearken back to my days in school, the thought was you had to memorize your speech before you got up there, and just the nerves that accompanied that approach in delivery. Do you believe in memorization of speeches, especially for students when they're looking at providing a very first or those initial presentations?
I don't. Remember that there are these two distinct parts. I want students to build a speech, and I want them to have written it out, really the full text, if you will, of the speech. And when it comes time to perform that speech, you put it aside. In the process of building it, you probably become pretty familiar with what it is you're going to say. When you memorize it, it becomes kind of stilted, and I don't like that sort of speech. I'm not a person who likes the stylistic, and you've heard these kind of speakers, and you know it's memorized, and there's a certain style that they use, and this is the official oratory style. I'm not in favor of that. What I tell kids to do is become familiar with it and don't get word bound, because if you memorize it, you'll say something like, it was an exciting event. Oh, I meant to say it was a fantastic event. That's what you get yourself flustered because you're word bound. It's not exactly what you memorized. So I prefer that kids have nothing more than trigger phrases in front of them. Something that will just help them when they, you know, a sentence that tips them off to this whole section of the speech, and then make it more conversational.
I like that trigger phrase. That's I'm going to use that as well, if you don't mind.
Feel free.
Let's talk about this. I'm fascinated with TED Talks, and I'd be curious as to whether or not you enjoy them as well. And what has been the impact on that style of presentation, even from the professional world down to kids, even in elementary school, thinking about presenting on one topic in that form or fashion?
Well, I love TED Talks, as you would guess, right? I mean, here's oral communication being valued, and thousands and millions of people are watching these things online and think, great, we get the concept that oral communication matters. And certainly, it's a great opportunity to teach how to build something, because TED Talks are pretty universally well built. Great ideas designed for the audience, with great content, organized well, powerful visual aids usually, and the speakers look the way speakers should look. So it's great in terms of concepts and building. And sometimes it's great in terms of performing, and sometimes it isn't, and that has value too, to show students. You know, some of these people are masters with building a speech, but not so good at performing. How could you do this better? Others, of course, you watch a TED Talk and think that person has it all. So I love the concept. I love the idea of sharing them with kids. I love the idea of getting kids to try and create their own TED Talks. It's all good.
When are we going to see your TED Talk?
You know, that's an interesting question. I have been asked about this, and someone said there's TEDx and there's TED-Ed, and have you applied to these? And South by Southwest has an education thing. I think it'll happen. I think I'll get around to it, but I've been pleasantly busy with book contracts, because as soon as I finish one, someone says, well, what about another?
Oh, well, that's
so
good.
It's been a great surprise in keeping me busy.
Wonderful. Well, tell us what's next for you. It sounds like there are maybe more books from the one that was just released.
I just signed a contract, another contract with ASCD, the people who did Teaching the Core Skills of Listening and Speaking, which is about internet literacy. Doesn't seem like it's my topic, but if you look at listening standards, whether it's Common Core or Indiana or anybody else, listening involves more than just sit still and be quiet. It's how do you make sense of, how do you integrate and evaluate information from diverse sources? And one of those sources is the internet. And I find that kids are not particularly adept at understanding what's going on online and how to evaluate websites. So I'm doing a little book on that. And Houghton Mifflin has brought me on as a consultant for their language arts programs. They have some new language arts programs that are amazing, and they are valuing speaking and listening. And so they brought me on to help with their speaking and listening component of the language arts program. So people are discovering, after years of not paying attention, we're paying attention. And well, I'm happy about that.
That's very, very good news. I want to make sure that people can find you. And you said it's pvlegs.com, Eric?
pvlegs.com.
Wonderful.
And you'll see my approach to teaching speaking. Really what I'm about is taking, because we all have oral communication, what I'm about is taking little mini lessons to develop speakers. And that pvlegs.com has a bunch of little mini speeches you can use, and here's a little mini speech that will help kids develop gestures. Here's a mini speech that will help them get the concept of playing with speed, speeding up and slowing down for effect. So there are lesson ideas there. There are rubrics there. There are digital tools in addition to Flipgrid, Narrable, Impressor, Little Bird Tales. All these other things are on that website. So if somebody wants to get started in teaching kids, there's, I think, some help on there.
Wonderful. It sounds like it's a great source for both teachers, parents, and students. We want to thank Eric Palmer, whose latest book, Teaching the Core Skills of Listening and Speaking, is out with ASCD. Once again, I'm Dr. Rod Berger. This is The Core of Education.
This has been The Core of Education. You can contact us with questions or suggestions via email at core@randasolutions.com. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the position of Randa Solutions. Thank you for joining us.